This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
In this, still another edition of the Legislative Gazette, we'll hear more about the Cuomo administration's newest proposal to improve the state's economy. One of the persistent concerns of state government is whether the programs created and funded by the state are actually working. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. Many officials at the local level think there could be better communication between the two levels. The Legislative Commission on State-Local Relations is working on such concerns. Paul Moore is the executive director of the commission. He spoke with Leslie Brokaw.
Those areas are the level of state aid to local governments, the division of responsibility between state and local governments for providing services, state mandates on local governments, and finally, state limits on local taxing and borrowing powers.
And you had a meeting last week. I understand that there were representatives of perhaps 16 states there to basically exchange information about how they've facilitated local and state relations. What came out of that meeting? What was discussed?
That's correct. There are a number of other states, in fact, it's a growing phenomenon now, that are creating agencies like New York's Commission on State-Local Relationships, or State-Local Relations, to provide a buffer between state government and local governments and try to work together to resolve common problems. The meeting that we had last week was the first ever get-together of these groups on their own initiative to discuss some of the problems that they jointly were having and to apply our collective resources to perhaps solving some of those problems. I think some of the positive things that came out of it was, one, an increased awareness on all of our parts of, as just how common our problems are. Secondly, a new set of communications have developed where we will now send to each other copies of all of our reports and research materials. Thirdly, I think there was an awareness on my part of just how far ahead of the game that we are and how much of a leadership role we are playing, both in terms of convening this conference and having people look at our research agenda as we move ahead in the year ahead.
Are any other states in Western New England doing the same sort of things that New York's doing?
Massachusetts, I believe it was 2 years ago, enacted a reform in their general purpose aid program, and it is similar in nature to the kinds of things that we are looking at collectively as a state and local governmental system. They did some things that I'm not sure we would want to go that far in doing. For example, they looked at the different wage rates in the Boston area versus some of the more rural areas, and tried to compensate for the increased cost of providing services. We may or may not be able to do that. On the other hand, I think we will go farther than they did in relating the level of aid to the level of services being provided because of this cataloging approach that we've embarked upon.
Does New York State face any specific problems in this question, and I understand that they're designing a new aid system. Can you talk about those two things?
This year, the legislature passed and the governor signed a 2-year program of increased general purpose aid to local governments. That program was put into place to give us essentially a 2-year window of opportunity to look at ways in which we can improve the system of aid and tie it more directly to actual services being provided at the local level. The conference that we held last week discussing, among other things, the relationship between the level of services being provided and how that can be tied into distributing state aid, I think will go a long ways in helping local governments here in New York work with us and find a mechanism to actually link these two concepts together. We have been working with Cornell University under a contract to actually catalog services at the local level. That That's never been done before, and their work is now reaching a point where we're going to have some data shortly that everyone can look at and begin to meld into a distribution formula. Much of what is going on in the work of the Commission on State-Local Relations, the organizations representing local government in the state, are done in a very cooperative fashion through a working group approach. We're not in the glare of publicity. We just are working very carefully and methodically behind the scenes so that every once in a while we can have these successes and we can have these accomplishments that all of a sudden, when you least expect it, there they are. And it's good to have the chance through WAMC and your program to assure people that progress is being made.
Paul Moore, Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on State and Local Relations. Now a word from Dr. Lee Merengoff, Director of the Marist College Institute for Public Opinion.
This past week, on newsstands throughout the nation, a familiar figure to New York politics was seen on the cover of Newsweek. Geraldine Ferraro is back in the public spotlight with the publication of her new book on the 1984 campaign, and Newsweek has published excerpts from it. This journalistic event and the additional publicity that will follow from the book itself will no doubt have an impact on the political future of the former congresswoman from Queens. Since her failed attempt to become vice president, there has been ongoing speculation about whether or not Jerry Ferraro will seek the New York Senate seat in 1986, the seat currently held by Republican Al D'Amato. Ferraro is said to be currently assessing her chances. Should she decide to run, the political climate that marred her last effort will still need to be reckoned with, namely the financial matters which followed her husband and stalled her campaign. If Ferraro decides to run against D'Amato, she will first have to win the Democratic primary. There, she's likely to find Brooklyn D.A. Elizabeth Holtzman, herself a former congresswoman, who was narrowly defeated by D'Amato last time out. Clearly, Jerry Ferraro has a big personal and political decision on her hands. In response to questions about whether she plans to run, Ferraro states that she intends to conduct a poll to help her decide. Although many politicians would approach running the same way, a poll taken a year before an election is a real bad barometer of public opinion. Polls are simply poor predictors of voting behavior so far in advance of an election. I also have problems with a potential candidate relying too much on poll data to shape a decision about seeking public office. I realize the power that the technology of polling brings to campaigns, but I also believe that a decision to run for office should be primarily motivated from a desire to serve and less about the chances of winning. Expect Ferraro to make a decision by Thanksgiving on whether to run for the Senate. In the meantime, for the Legislative Gazette, this is Lee Merengoff at the Marist College Institute for Public Opinion in Poughkeepsie.
Earlier this week, Governor Cuomo took the wraps off his latest plan to bolster New York's economy. The point man for this and other initiatives in that realm is Vincent Tese, the governor's economic development coordinator.
Tell me, what is this plan supposed to do at its very best?
Well, I think at its very best, it will do two things. One, it'll keep the economic pluses that New York has going in its favor, continue to go in its favor, and it'll address some of the economic weaknesses that New York has and hopefully correct them and turn them into pluses.
It sounds to me as if it might be a Republican rather than a Democratic plan. What do you think about that?
No, I don't think that's true at all. I think economic development has been a priority of Governor Cuomo's, and I think that it doesn't have a party identification, that it's something that hopefully will bring jobs to the people of the state of New York. And when we take it to the legislature, even though it's been introduced by Governor Cuomo, we would hope that the legislature deals with it as something good for the people of the state of New York and forget about partisan politics.
Well, is that likely to happen in a gubernatorial and perhaps even a presidential, with a presidential election coming up? Are the Republicans about to let this governor steal their thunder on their traditional issues?
Well, I think that when it comes to issues such as these, the legislature acts with responsibility, and that's been my opinion of dealing with both sides of the houses. And I would expect that if we can convince them that this plan is meritorious, it'll gain support.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the various parts of the program. You're going to rebuild the airports, the ports, the waterways. Is this too ambitious for a state that we frequently think of as being at least marginally broke?
Well, no, we're not near marginally broke, but I would say that in the report we make reference to the Port Authority and the Port of New York and the airports in and around New York. That, as you know, is a partnership between New York and New Jersey, and it's run by the Port Authority. And we call for the Port Authority to keep up its efforts in the growth of Kennedy. They're involved in a major expansion. They subsidize those types of activities through the revenues generated by those activities and also by the revenues they generate on other activities. When it comes to other airports, you can do many, many things in various sections of the state without really expending a lot of dollars, by putting attention on them, by putting some of the powers that you have on them, and by allocating resources in and around the area in order to develop them. We're working on, or we're about to work on, a project up in Rochester, and it's not a really a very costly project, and we're exploring it right now with the city of Rochester to work on some economic development on their airport, in the city of Syracuse. So I don't really think that you need to expend tremendous amounts of money in economic development. What you have to do is expend some money and leverage private sector money.
Okay. How do you go about leveraging?
Well, leveraging is, we call for it in the plan in many different ways. One is we call for a venture capital partnership made up of public money and private money. Well, the question is, how do you entice private venture capital into a public venture capital deal? One of the ways you entice it in is by giving it tax benefits. If you give them tax benefits, then they're induced into entering a deal with you.
But why would they stay, Commissioner? Why would they stay once you give them this incentive after the tax benefits inevitably run out? Why don't they just pick up and leave?
Well, number one, venture capital is not the most liquid form of investment, so you can't always just pick up and leave. I would think that most investments in venture capital are long-term in nature. Also, I think...
What do you mean when you say venture capital, for those of us who are not...
Seed money in startup businesses, for instance, high-tech type business or low-tech type business or almost any number of other type businesses that start up around the state. One, for instance, would be Toshiba, a Japanese firm in Westinghouse, have started a production of an electronics firm up in upstate New York. We put in a venture loan to that particular deal because it created 700 jobs.
How do we try to make them stay? In other words, are there strings tied to these loans?
Oh, yeah, there certainly are. If for instance, somebody picks up their operation and moves to somewhere else, number one, the loan is callable, and number two, we usually attach penalties to that. That's really not the problem. The problem is creating capital at a cost that encourages that type of business investment.
Without giving away the store.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you have called for the creation of economic opportunity zones. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, an opportunity zone is a zone in an area that's severely depressed. That takes the power of the state and the power of the local government combined with incentives from the state and from the local government to create an atmosphere that makes it conducive to firms to locate there from other places, other states, not from within the state, but from other states, or to expand an operation into an opportunity zone.
So what if somebody were there already and you were facing the loss of that industry, for example, in Buffalo, which would be one of those zones, presumably, And you were, they were going to walk. Would you be able to? Would they be able to get anything out of the Opportunity Zone? Would you
no,
be able to keep them there?
We're not going to allow companies to move from one location within the state to another in order to avail themselves of Opportunity Zones. We use other mechanisms to keep firms in the state that plan on moving because of the cost of doing business in the state. We've done it any number of times with other firms, and that's really not the specific purpose of Opportunity Zones.
You talk about the supply of cheap electric power in some cases in order to make businesses come to New York, stay in New York. How do you do that when there's such a fight going on right now about who gets our existing, for example, hydroelectric power?
Well, we do it right now, believe it or not. When we bid the Saturn plant, one of the aspects of bidding Saturn was...
You're talking about Saturn for our listeners who don't know, the GM plant where they had... They announced they were going to put a new plant in here. New York tried to get that plant.
Right. Okay. And New York is probably the one state in the country that can avail itself of very inexpensive power because of our hydroelectric supply in the northern part of the state.
But that's a political hot potato, right, because the upstaters don't want that power taken away.
No, the upstaters don't want that power taken away, but in cases like Saturn and other bids, we go to the legislature and we ask the legislature to allow us to allocate that power. What we're calling for now is for the establishment of a business board to allocate power. And the reason for that is that it's very difficult for us to go to a company and to give them a pitch about being in New York State, when, in fact, we have to go back to the legislature and get the power allotment after the fact. They have to rely on us going back and getting that power allotment. If there is a business allocation board when it comes to power, then we can make that commitment
up front.
To the company up front.
Sure. Okay. Now, on the question of export, I was fascinated with this. You talked in the report about setting up... establishing procedures to try to help New York State businesses export to foreign markets more. What shape would that take?
Well, I guess the former would be some type of lending organization and insuring organization. And we've done a lot of studies in the area. And basically, export is for small and medium-sized credits of maybe $2 million and under, really don't have the availability to the banking system because the banking system is only interested in large credits, so the difficult type loans. And also the Ex-Im Bank, the one that the federal government has set up, is not really a vehicle for small and medium-sized exporters. The other problem is that they're not sophisticated enough or large enough to avail themselves of various types of currency hedging, and they're subjected to severe currency risks. Our studies show us that if we set up an institution that can deal in these small to medium-sized credits and also can help them hedge in their various currency risks, that we really would encourage exports and fill a vacuum that is a big vacuum in New York. It should be noticed that New York is the third largest exporter in the United States, and it contributes on something like $25 billion to our economy.
This sounds like a national move, though, rather than a state move. Could it be that the governor would be setting himself up to be to say in a presidential campaign that this is a I did this for New York State, now let me do it for the United States, redress the balance of payments?
No, I don't think that's the motivating factor at all. I think that the governor would just like to address the economic issues in New York in a very positive, innovative, and constructive way, and I don't think it carries on to national politics at all.
Okay, now, if one of the things I was interested in was the comments of Frank Morrow, who is the, as you certainly know, the Secretary of the Ways and Means, the Democratic Ways and Means Committee of the Assembly, in which he was fairly critical about the way the report was prepared, because he says he didn't really see your arithmetic at how you arrived at your conclusions, giving as one example naming Utica Rome as one of those economic opportunity zones when he said that, and as the number two priority when he says that that he would have liked to know how you arrived at that. And I was interested in the fact that the fellow Democrats were offering that kind of criticism.
Well, Frank's a good guy. He's a very intellectual guy. And I could tell you that we worked on this report for 4 months. And when we first did it, it was a book about 5,000 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's the book we should have gave Frank, because that's the one with all the statistical data in it that we thought nobody would read. So we got it down to a manageable size where people could read it, be informed, and get a feeling for some of our ideas. But we're going to send our unabridged book to Frank.
So you don't see this as sort of a competitiveness between the two Democrats, Cuomo and Fink, over who gets to play?
There is always competitiveness among staffs, but it's friendly competitiveness.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that that Frank will give this the attention that it deserves. We have a very good working relationship.
What is the outstanding part of this program that really we should be looking at most closely?
Well, I think there are five main items in the program that we think are good, solid. We think all the ideas are good, but mm-hmm. some of the ideas are mega ideas. And certainly the Industrial Development Bank is a strong idea. It's something that's critically necessary in New York.
Would that be good for business? In other words, would business types, businessmen like the Industrial Development Bank, would it?
I think that most businessmen will like it. I know labor will like it because
sure.
They've told me they like it. So I think it's good for everybody. I think the opportunity zones are a good idea. 26 states have them. They work in some states. They don't work on others. We've looked at the ones that work, and we think we've modeled ours after the ones that work, and we think we can implement it the right way, and we think it's good for the state of New York. I mean, how the hell are you going to address the problems in those areas unless you're going to take some bold action? I mean, people have talked for the last 10 years and have not taken the bold action that's necessary, and we'd like to give this a try, and we think it's important. We think the import-export authority is something that's necessary and something that we definitely should do. We think the venture capital fund is absolutely necessary and is something we should do. And we think the whole study of the rules and regs and dealing with the business community and getting rid of some of these archaic laws that have been on our books since the year 1910 or whatever is important to the state, and streamlining the state operation and then doing away with waste and making more with less.
Let's see if I can be provocative on one last issue.
Sure.
And that has to do with the plan to give economic incentives to businesses which will hire people on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in this because on several of my radio shows with the governor, he has referred to the fact that that he believes that most of the people who are on welfare are there because they have no real choices, that in fact they're women, they're children, and that they are not the able-bodied people who are portrayed as being on welfare. And yet along comes this study which essentially says hire these people, and implicit in that is the fact that there are people there who could and should be hired by private industry.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything inconsistent in that?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that work is better than welfare. I think it can benefit the welfare recipients because they can have a job and learn skills and eventually be able to get off that subsidy
mm-hmm.
And be productive. I think it's good for businessmen because it gives them an incentive to take a chance on somebody that was not hireable.
Don't get me wrong, I agree with that, but I'm still asking you why, if all along the governor has been saying that most people who are on welfare are there because they cannot work for one reason or another, why are we now making the assumption that...
Well, I don't know what the governor meant by cannot. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for cannot. One is you cannot work because you can't get a job.
Mm-hmm. I see your point.
You know, so I don't know what you mean by cannot. I think in the context of the governor probably said it is that these people cannot get jobs because for whatever reason, that, you know, if you haven't been employed for 5 years, go try to get a job.
Sure.
It's very difficult.
It's even difficult when you were employed yesterday.
Sometimes.
Vincent Tese. I guarantee you that should Mario M. Cuomo become president of the United States, that 20 years later there will be a doctoral dissertation written about how he got elected, and the doctoral student will discover an obscure set of papers that she will claim were a blueprint of how Mario Cuomo got to the White House, and it will be his economic development plan for the state of New York. The plan will have something for everyone, but mostly it will be his plan for defining the way in which the Democratic Party should make peace with what has always been a hostile business community. It will have economic development banks and something called enterprise zones for encouraging business, and it will lay out how New York State should export more goods in order to redress the balance of payments. The student will tell us, in that obscure document, Cuomo was laying out his grander plan for the country and would go on to say in his presidential campaign rhetoric, quote, "Let me do for the country what I did for New York State in this area." The dissertation will point out that Cuomo had been searching in vain for a way to create a new identity for the Democratic Party. It will go on to suggest that what Cuomo began to do was to rob what was best offered by the Republicans and then serve it back up to them and say, "I dare you to reject what you yourselves have always advocated." The student will hypothesize that Cuomo's strength lay in his ability to outflank the opposition in a manner rather brilliant. If the Republicans tried to reject the program, they would alienate the very business community who had always supported them. If they said, "Yes, but it's always been our program," no one would listen, which is exactly what happens every time a governor steals a program from the legislature. Yes, the student will say, this document was the beginning of the way in which the governor attempted to dispel the fears of the business community that he was a classical liberal, that he would take from the rich and give to the poor. Little by little, he was accepting trickle-down economics. Why, he was even offering money to business in order to get them to hire people who had previously been on the welfare rolls. Finally, the learned scholar will say Cuomo managed to get the business community to overcome their antipathy towards him, which was only increased when he vetoed their treasured corporate takeover bill. So QED, will say our scholar. That's how Cuomo had his way with the business community. That's our show for this week. Join us again next week for another look at state government and politics. Bill Gralty edits and produces this program. Leslie Brokaw is associate editor. Please address comments and questions to us at WAMC Box 13000, Albany, New York, 12212. I'm Alan Chartok.
The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the State University of New York College at New Paltz.